the idea of we're not kind of underlings or servants, it's you're also a gentleman serving another lady and gentleman. So they really get across this idea of you're going to serve people in an elegant way and kind of take care of their needs.
That is Eric Nachbar, or as I like to call him, Professor Nachbar, aka Protector of the Dark Web. He and his company Helion Automotive Technologies is a unique company in the automotive space where they are protectors of the dark web for dealerships.
The topic on this upcoming episode resonates very well with me. I have a bit of a short fuse when it comes to IT or information technology. And so on this episode, you'll hear about the importance of having a proactive strategy, of delivering support to your employees, and how important it is to have a simple plan and to stick with that plan when it comes to IT.
And as Eric will tell you, one of the better learning moments of his work life was when he worked at the Ritz-Carlton. I'm Dennis Wisco.
Alongside Kelly Cruz.
And this is the Wisco Weekly Podcast. Let's get into the show.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Chicken brown cow. Listeners, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Wisco Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Wisco. Joining me today is a special guest who will be speaking at the Thought Leadership Summit here in Marina Del Rey. He seems to be the only person and company in the industry that is dealing with automotive IT services, so this is going to be a really enlightening episode, personally for myself and hopefully for the rest of you. So let's introduce my guest here. Get some life experience after college, they say. Go and travel the world. Be a peon for a Fortune 500 company and learn from the best, they say. My guest today has taken the road less traveled. He did not work for a Fortune 500 company out of college to learn from others. He did not take some time off to get some life experience. What did he do? He went from college to start his own company. Eric Nachbar is the president and founder of Helion Automotive Technologies and Helion Trucking Technologies. After graduating from Loyola University in Maryland, Eric shortly thereafter started Helion, an end-to-end solution to handle any and all the demands an automotive business needs to operate their information technology. Helion serves more than 650 automotive and heavy-duty trucking dealerships and 28,000 end users. The company handles an average of 300 help desk calls every day and resolves more than 6,000 IT issues per month. Eric was a finalist for the Ernst & Young's Entrepreneur of the Year 2017 award, which recognizes entrepreneurs who are excelling in areas of innovation, financial performance, and personal commitment to their business and community. To that end, he is also a board of director for the Family Tree, an organization in Maryland which supports the prevention of child abuse and helps build strong families to improve society. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the podcast Mr. Eric Nachbar.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, Eric, your last name is certainly it's actually pretty simple, but the spelling of it is pretty complicated. Nachbar, and you said you have German roots, but you were raised in the Netherlands, or
my family is from the Netherlands, so both of my parents were raised in Amsterdam and emigrated here to the U.S.
Interesting. Okay, and you know what? Are you following the World Cup?
I honestly have not been following the World Cup very closely because the Netherlands, I think, were knocked out.
Yeah, okay.
So I know that much.
Okay, I was going to ask if the Netherlands were in there, because generally they always have a good team.
Yeah, they didn't make it this year, so that was a huge disappointment.
So, Eric, I thought one of the things I would start off with in this podcast episode here was, I had the chance to research you a little bit. Not even a little bit, a lot. There are some things out there. There was an interview that I saw where it was Brian Pasch that interviewed you, and Brian did most of the talking, so I don't feel like you weren't properly represented. So I'd like to kind of first off take this opportunity to ask, you have this automotive tech company. How did you get into the automotive space out of college?
Yeah, so I have a history degree, and I realized a couple years into that history degree that there's not a lot of jobs for people with bachelor's degrees in history. You know, it could have been going to law school or you know, you have to go further. So, and that was right around the time that the internet was starting. So there was all this talk about the internet and internet service providers, and some folks that I was friends with at Loyola were into that. Hmm. And a couple recent graduates had actually gotten jobs at internet service providers, which was kind of fascinating to me. So I made a decision to really just get involved with IT at Loyola, and they kind of had some emerging technology studies and a business, something tied to the business school that was doing website design before people, you know, I was like, what are we even doing this for? You know, we're creating a website for McCormick. Who's ever going to look at this stupid thing? Because nobody knew what that was. But that got me involved. And then I started working in IT, and I got some different internships, first at an internet provider, then at Aon, you know, the global insurance underwriter. And that really was tantalizing to me. Mm. You know, they handed me a disk with Windows 95 and said, go around and upgrade all the PCs to Windows 95. And I thought there must be a better way. So I grabbed a book and started reading up on things, and it was fascinating.
So what was your prior experience to IT before this then?
None. I mean, I got into IT really just kind of messing around in college, you know, tinkering around with my own computer that I had gotten, playing video games, and kind of it was more a hobby before I got started.
Well, yeah, so I was going to ask you that. So, you know, take me back to high school and in college. What were some of your hobbies at that time?
Well, I mean, one of my hobbies was tinkering around with computers, playing video games.
Mm. What was your favorite video game at that time?
Oh, geez. I mean, in college, it was Doom, the original Doom, you know, that had to, you installed it with four floppy disks. So, you know, that was, it was all just fun to me. Mm. You know, so it was kind of natural to get involved and go work at places that needed IT.
And then you did an internship at the Ritz-Carlton, which coincidentally, the conference is taking place at a Ritz-Carlton. How did you get into an internship at the Ritz-Carlton? And was there anything you learned about that experience that you've applied to your business today?
Absolutely. Well, so I got an internship at the Ritz-Carlton because halfway through my college career, I thought I'm going to go, you know, I saw all these people like Anthony Bourdain and, you know, for these fancy chefs and thought, I'm going to go get a culinary degree. So I took 2 years off from school, got a culinary degree, and, you know, promptly realized how hard that is and went back to college. So it was a good motivator. But in that process, I did a 6-month internship at the Ritz-Carlton in Washington, D.C. And, you know, with a couple guys, cooked dinner for President Clinton, cooked dinner for Ross Perot, you know, and it was amazing. And where that took me is the Ritz-Carlton is really unbelievable in how they are able to convey their culture to anyone that works there.
Explain
whether you're
that, please, yeah.
Well, so their culture is one of, you know, we are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. So that's kind of, that's their motto. Mm. And the idea of we're not kind of underlings or servants, it's you're also a gentleman serving another lady and gentleman. So they really get across this idea of you're going to serve people in an elegant way and kind of take care of their needs. And that, and a lot of the other principles that they taught there, that really stuck with me through the business. You know, and you can see today the Ritz, you know, Chick-fil-A has, you can go to Ritz-Carlton kind of how to deliver fancy service school that their HR department puts on. But for us, it's really the idea of, how do you make sure that you try to kind of anticipate and really fulfill the wishes of the people that you're serving? Mm. And that's really what the Ritz does. I mean, they create a mystique and kind of a very specific culture. And that's what I learned. I mean, we're obviously not a hotel and we're not serving hotel guests, but it translated to me for my business of, we want to be deliberate in how we talk to people. We want to be deliberate in what the experience is going to be.
Assuming you can be in all places at once. And specifically, if you can be a board of director to one dealer, what would be, you know, the ABC guide of how they should operate their IT?
Well, yeah. So the fundamental piece of IT, you know, kind of the turning the lights on, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? It should just work. Is having a strategy for all of the pieces of it, right? Your PC refreshes, making sure they stay current, all of the back-end hardware and plumbing and servers and email. So having a strategy just to refresh that and keep it current. Dealers frequently have no idea what they have. There's no plan around it. It's very reactive. So having a proactive strategy, having a very clear method for delivering support to employees. You know, dealers will very frequently have limited IT staff, limited knowledge, internal staff that don't know a lot, and just limited resources, and employees live with issues that, you know, if you've got a person in a technician in the shop that is living with the fact that he constantly gets disconnected from the wireless when he's flashing a car, that's actually costing you money, right? Mm-hmm. That thing's sitting on lit. So having a service delivery method, whatever, I mean, I obviously believe in outsourced service delivery, but having a clear method that delivers outstanding service to the employees. And then the third piece that I would say that's really important is keeping the IT infrastructure simple and on plan. So I notice a lot of times dealers are looking at this new software product, that new software product. You know, they're buying things or...
It's like all these bells and whistles that they get right. enamored by.
Exactly. And they don't, you know, are there strategic products out there that you can put in a dealership that will help efficiency and drive revenue? Absolutely. And I look at a lot of them, right? I mean, even stuff like, okay, we're going to have this device, you know, in the lane when a car pulls in to do a quick alignment mm-hmm. check and then sell them. That makes perfect sense to me. Mm. But the dealers have to look at, okay, who are my people? Who are my capabilities? What kind of leadership do I have in place? And how many of these things can we execute on? And then pick the ones that they really know are going to work in their organization and with their culture and drive those. I see dealers kind of all over the place with technology, and they spend a lot of time and money, and it doesn't get them what they want.
Do you foresee that there are some security threats that are detrimental to a dealership operation?
Oh, absolutely.
And what are some of those?
Well, the threat to dealers are these multinational, basically cyber criminal organizations that are operating out of Eastern European countries, Russian speaking countries. They're outside of the extradition of the U.S. And they are going after dealers and trying to infiltrate their systems and exfiltrate data and attack their bank accounts. So we're seeing regular attacks on dealers' IT infrastructure where they're deploying bot networks into the dealerships. They're grabbing people's passwords and logging into their accounts. We had a dealer recently where they tricked a salesperson to give up their username and password to their email and then use that to get a $250,000 wire transfer directed to their account instead of to another dealership where they were doing a dealer exchange.
I've seen some of this stuff too, yeah. where it's like, yeah, if somebody will call in and they'll act like they're from a particular company and ask questions to which, yeah, the other person, if they're not keen on this stuff, they will give up the information, and there you go. All of a sudden, there's a breach there. I did think of the question. Which, you know, this again goes back to you're talking about that there's threats coming from Eastern Europe. So your knowledge of the world seems very practical, but it's also you're aware of what's going on. What are some of the where do you get your information from? What are some of the media outlets that you follow?
Well, specifically for hacking threats, the big source for that is SANS, which is kind of the organization that has a lot of training on cybersecurity. So the most recent thing I did is I went to a SANS conference for 2 days.
Is that SANS?
Yep, SANS. Okay. Where they brought in, the whole conference was basically chief security officers from large organizations and representatives, agents from the Secret Service and the FBI. So these guys come in and talk about all of the threats around the world. I mean, it's fascinating. It's like it being in the movies. You know, they come in with their guns and their badges, and they're talking about how they go after cyber criminals.
You gave a presentation that you were talking about the dealer threats to an IT infrastructure, and one of them being the Federal Trade Commission. And then you talk about some other things. If you fast forward till this day, the presentation that you gave with regards, I guess first off, if you can kind of give our listeners a little bit more detail and perspective about that presentation, how relevant is, is that presentation you gave to today? Are there still threats that a dealership is facing from the FTC?
Well, I mean, the threats with the Federal Trade Commission really revolve around the notion that dealers fall under some pretty specific statutes that require them to safeguard customer information. And they don't do that very well.
Yeah.
So is the threat still there? Absolutely. It's grown. I mean, we haven't seen a ton of activity from the FTC going after dealers for breaches and violations that have occurred, because we're not seeing breaches really so much that are impacting customer data. The threats against dealers are much more revolving around going after the dealerships, the actual businesses' money and bank accounts, and extracting those things. You know, customer data, social security numbers, credit cards, they're just readily available. So the hackers and bad actors can go onto the dark web and they can readily access, if they want to get, you know, Eric Nachbar's social security number or passwords, they can go find those. Hmm. What they're really after today that we're seeing in the dealership world is getting at these vast amounts of money that live in dealers' bank accounts. Hmm. So the conversation today
is more like, this is my opinion, not yours. This is like more of a racket than it is any kind of...
It's organized crime.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we've seen, you know, where before we were kind of more like, well, we really got to watch out for keeping them away from your customer databases, which is still an issue. More now we're looking at the attacks that we're seeing regularly are attacking the businesses themselves.
Maybe first share with me, are there any particular books, authors, role models that have impacted you, had challenged the way you think, and therefore you've then kind of spread that into your business or into your process of decision making?
Sure. Well, I mean, in general, the Ritz was made a huge impression on me. I was 19 when I had that experience. So just kind of the idea of service and being able to really kind of have a process for delivering that and a culture around that made a huge impression. From just in terms of technology and business, I'm a nerd. I mean, I grew up loving Star Wars and Star Trek and reading all kinds of science fiction books. And the author that I really love is Isaac Asimov. And if you look at kind of real classic science fiction, it's all about humans and their interaction with technology and how that changes them and changes their behavior. So I'm fascinated by and really enjoy kind of looking at technology and figuring out how it can change what's going on for people in their day-to-day lives. Mm-hmm. That's really what fascinated me about. I like helping people. Technology frequently is mysterious to them. You know, they don't understand how it works. They're afraid of it. It changes very quickly. So all of those things, as I started getting involved with people in the business realm and seeing how you can really help them adopt technology and how it makes their lives better, that's been kind of always the driver that brings me joy, you know, and I find fascinating.
Is there any such technology at the moment? And again, whether it's coming from Helion or if it's just out and about, what is some of the current technology that fascinates you?
Well, I mean, one of the most fascinating things out there is the self-driving cars, that concept. So I got a new car, I got a BMW, and the newest model of it, it drives down the road and it stays in between the lines and it follows the car ahead of it. And that just to me is magical. It just blows my mind that a car can do that. I mean, it's obvious that it can. I mean, these Teslas pretty much can drive themselves. Mm-hmm. But I'm also fascinated by wireless technologies. That keeps moving forward, and the speed at which things can communicate wirelessly. I think eventually it's all just going to be wireless. And
In terms of when you say all is going to be wireless, and you know specifically to cars, can you elaborate a little bit more on what you mean by that?
Well, I mean the notion of like right. I mean the car I just got, for example, it has a wireless
hotspot
for the devices. But the idea of the cars being directly updated and getting live data and I mean they're somewhat connected now. They can talk to GPS. They get traffic data. But they're going to be even more updated, you know. So they integrate with Apple. I mean, it's hard to kind of visualize where they're going to go, but it all seems like it makes my life more convenient and better.
Now, one of the areas too, it seems like you're pretty passionate about a subject matter. You're pretty passionate about then is data security, privacy, right? Is that fair to say?
Sure. Yep.
And as a matter of fact, Manny, I think, is that what you'll be discussing at this conference here?
It is, yeah. Security, specifically, you know, securing the infrastructure in dealerships, yep.
Okay, so, I'm curious then, when it comes to, self-driving cars, of course, one of the myths that are out there is, if you have a self-driving car, it could get hacked. And, you know, you've even seen videos of somebody who... I don't know if it was, I guess regardless, if it's either Wi-Fi or they're connecting straight into the OBD, they're literally sitting in the passenger seat and they're opening windows, they're putting the car into reverse. I mean, they're hacking the system. What do you see when it comes to data security of these cars and how that's, you know, is it overblown right now by everybody since nobody really knows exactly how this is going to play out? Or are the rumors out there, are they sensible?
Well, probably a little bit of both. I mean, there was a point in time, right, where people were standing there and saying it's absolutely preposterous that nothing will ever fly through the air and carry a person through the air. And then there were people that said, okay, you know, we're going to press forward and you're wrong and we're going to make it happen. And then they said, well, you'll crash, and they pushed on. And I think it's probably the same with cars. I mean, there are certainly, with self-driving cars, obstacles to overcome, and we're still evolving security when it comes to computer systems, cars, you name it. The earliest computer networks were not designed with security in mind. I mean, there's a famous argument, I think it was at MIT, that the designers of the first computer network were arguing for and against, should there be a password? You know, so when you look at the way that kind of the technology we have today is architected, it's inherently insecure. And a lot is going to change, I think, in the coming years, both with self-driving cars and everything we have to bring more security. But even the mechanisms we use today are just inconvenient and hard to adopt.
Certainly through 21 years, there's trials and tribulations, success and failures. Can you maybe walk me through, was there any particular moment in your 21 history that was, you know, it was a very impactful moment and perhaps a learning experience, you know, and tell me kind of what was going on at that time?
Yeah, I mean, probably the most impactful moment for me, and this is kind of embarrassing to admit, but 15 years in, you know, we had built the business, I'd bought an office building, we had grown, we had a lot of clients and a lot of employees, and I reached a point where, you know, our service delivery was not what it had been when we were smaller, and employees were very dissatisfied with kind of the direction of the company and the way it was being run and our corporate culture. And it really felt, you know, crappy to go to work every day. Mm. I was like, why am I don't even like this anymore.
Wow. Okay.
And, you know, it really got to the point where I was like, well, okay, maybe I'll just be about it for the money. And for me, I don't know how it works for everyone, but for me, it didn't get me there. I tried that for a little bit. All right, I'm just going to, you know, get the money out of this place. And it was still miserable. And as it turned out, after looking, so I brought in a consultant and I joined a CEO peer group with other businesses in Baltimore that have completely different businesses than mine, but all of them were bigger than me. So I was kind of the small fish in the big pond.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, you know, this is where the downside of not having a business degree. So I really didn't, I mean, I'd kind of intuited my way to a certain size, but didn't know anything about really, how do you, at a large scale, grow a corporate culture? How do you ensure that people are kind of learning the things you need to learn? I had made I've seen this in the car business too, and I think it's a classic business mistake. I had taken my best technical people and promoted them to be managers, right? It's the age old, make the sales guy the sales manager.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally different skill set. So we had managers in place that didn't know how to run things, and it was rough, and people were unhappy. And the realization for me was that all ultimately came back to me, what this company was and kind of where we were culturally, and that bad feeling came back to me, and behaviors I had and the way I was approaching things. So it was kind of this, you know, epiphany moment of, wow, we're not in a good place, and I'm the king. So, you know.
Yeah. So then, how did you fix that?
Yeah. So I joined, like I said, the CEO group, right. And then we brought in this consultant who was, you know, and he still works with us on our business plans. This guy Pat Bennett, who among other things had run Covad, a $500 million, you know, a year publicly traded company, and he basically came in as kind of the business 101 coach. You know, here we're going to teach you guys, you kids, you know, how to do this. And he brought us a lot of things that were hard to hear. And at my CEO group, there were a lot of things that were hard to hear. But I was honest with him and honest with them on the struggles we were having. And pretty quickly, you know, it was things like, look, you got to have the right people, you know, the right leadership team. You got to have the right people in the right seats on the bus. Things that I had never really thought about, you know, things that seemed kind of wrong. Oh, I've got a guy running our service desk that he's never run a service desk like this. So bringing in people that had experience, that knew how to do these things, knew how to scale the business, understood metrics. We didn't look at any metrics. We came in every day and just kind of did what we needed to do. Yeah. All right, you know, I got 20 issues that have come in. Have we closed them all? You know, started looking at how quickly we're resolving things. So it was a whole process that, you know, coming out on the other side now with the hindsight of 2020, you know, looking back at this point 6 years, I mean, we're a completely different company. So that to me has, and we learned so many things about actually running a business versus, you know, the things that I'm passionate about, you know, that hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And helping dealers hasn't changed. But
if you're going to help those dealers, then you yourself have to make sure that the rest of the operation is in line and it's well oiled, and so yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And there's a lot of moving parts to, when you know, when you get to, I mean, we're 130 people now, you can't keep your arms around all of that. You've got to have the right leadership in place. You got to have the right things in place to make it.
So,
this ties back to the Ritz-Carlton. So our mission is, we want to be the employer of choice for top industry talent. And we want to be the vendor of choice for heavy truck dealers and auto dealers. And if you look at that, there's a parallel there to the Ritz-Carlton motto of, we are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. You know, if you look at ours, the we want to be the employer of choice for top talent comes first. We want to be a great place for people to work. We want them to be top talent. We want to continue to move their careers forward. So the most important thing is that we have people that are happy, that are well taken care of, which I was not focused on. And that's something that I'm very focused on, you know, and have been now for quite some time. Mm. They have to be happy. You know, there's a book that was influential, you know, happy cows produce more milk, mm-hmm. right? So that idea, we want to have that. Then we want to, you know, look for the top industry representation from dealers. We want to have great clients that get it, that get IT, that we're not dragging along, but that see us as part of their competitive advantage, as part of their growth, as part of their strategy for success.
Yo, listeners, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Wisco Weekly. A special shout out and thank you to my guest, Eric Knockbar, for wrapping out with me and sitting down and talking about his business and sharing some of his insight about the automotive industry. Please visit the episode page and you can find out some more information about Eric and methods to contact him. And it's also been nice chatting with everyone for the last couple weeks now on some of the different things going on with the show and helping you guys out with car buying advice and directing you to the right people and the right deals to go to. Find out more information on doing business with dealer executives by visiting wiscoweeklypod.com. And as we end every episode, cheers, prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, kampai, salud, mabruk to the customer experience.